WML News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Today kicks off early voting in the Senate runoff race in Georgia. It's the final Senate contest of the midterms. Democratic incumbent Raphael Warnock's hoping to fend off Republican challenger Herschel Walker.
The start date ended up in court after Georgia law says early in-person voting is not allowed on a Saturday if the Thursday or Friday before is a holiday. Warnock's campaign argued the law only applies to primaries and general elections, not runoffs. The state Supreme Court ruled Wednesday that counties can start early voting today. Democrats will have control of the Senate regardless of the winner, but a win from Warnock would leave Democrats with a 51-49 majority, whereas a Walker win would bring the Senate to 50-50 with the vice president casting tie-breaking votes. Ryan Schmelz, Fox News.
She was declared the loser of Arizona's gubernatorial race, but that's not stopping Republican Carrie Lake in her quest to lead the state. She's now filed a lawsuit for election records.
Lake hasn't conceded to Democrat Katie Hobbs, pointing to people stuck on long lines on Election Day and other difficulties in Maricopa, Arizona's largest county. The suit demands names of voters who may have had trouble casting ballots and information about ballots that were accidentally mixed. Certification of the election is scheduled for Monday. Gary Baumgarten, Fox News.
If you didn't get all of your Christmas shopping done on Black Friday, today's your chance to check some people off your list by shopping local on Small Business Saturday. Montgomery County Executive Mark Elrich.
Buying local during the holiday season is critical to our local economy. 95% of businesses in the county have 50 or fewer employees, so spending locally is important.
And 68 cents out of every dollar stays in the local economy when you shop local, according to American Express. It's homecoming time for thousands of Washingtonians who traveled for their turkey dinners, and that means congested roads once again.
Throughout the weekend, traveling earlier in the day is going to be best based on historical data.
Deidrean Dennis with the Virginia Department of Transportation.
The periods of heaviest congestion that we're expecting afternoon on Saturday, November 26th, all day Sunday, November 27th.
Dennis cautions roads could be busy through Tuesday. VDOT suspends most work zones during the holiday season. You can find the remaining ones on the agency's free app, 511. Rachel Sutherland on WMAL and WMAL.com.
WMAL Sports, the U.S. soccer team, settling for a draw in its World Cup game against England yesterday.
The U.S. team said that it would wear the underdog title with pride and managed to hold on to the ball for much of the game until the clock ran out 0-0. The U.S. star Christian Pulisic almost managed to seal the deal for the U.S. team, but ended up hitting the bar. Still, Americans here in Doha are celebrating before the next match. And in order to keep this World Cup dream alive, the U.S. will need to beat Iran on Tuesday.
Fox's Alex Hogan. The Wizards fell to the Heat 110-107. The Caps beat the Flames 3-0. Up next, traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Good morning. Currently in D.C. on 295, 395, and 695, plus the tunnels and bridges. No reports of any delays there. Now into Maryland on the Beltway. Around the Beltway, I looked at the cameras. Inner loop and outer loop, you're at speed. On 270, between the Beltway and Frederick, you're not tapping the brakes on the northbound side and on the southbound side. And in Prince George's County, between the two Beltways, on the BW Parkway and 95, no delays being reported north and south. And now, from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Cold start to your weekend, but plenty of sunshine will help push that mercury to near 60 degrees this afternoon. Overnight temperatures into the 40s with increasing clouds. Sunday, wet, particularly through the first half of the day with some moderate rain showers. Not quite as mild and windy in the 50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Brian Vandegraff.
Right now, 38 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now, on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Hour two of the Saturday Morning Update for Thanksgiving weekend. I'm Rick Fowler, and of course, John Gizzi joins us every Saturday morning. White House correspondent and chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning and a happy Thanksgiving weekend.
Happy Thanksgiving weekend to you, Rick, and to all our friends in Radio Land.
Well, kind of a quiet week on the political front, with the exception of Kevin McCarthy's trip to the southern border. Of course, he is the expected new Speaker of the House if he can get the votes. And he was down, and he was there saying that he's going to hold the hearings on the border. The White House called it a stunt. What do you make of the strategy?
Well, hearings have been held on site for decades. When he was chairman of the House Education and Labor Committee and carrying civil rights legislation in the 1960s, New York Congressman Adam Clayton Powell held outdoor hearings in Harlem, bringing forth people who were experiencing discrimination as well as schools that weren't up to par. How different is that from Kevin McCarthy arranging to have a hearing on the porous border, as well as on the people who are coming into the border? I might add that the district that he's in just elected a new Republican House member, Representative De La Cruz, of Hispanic ancestry and a hardliner on border security. In addition, people in the McAllen, Texas area who have experienced just what it means to be surrounded by those coming into the country illegally will have their voices heard and on national television. My guess is that Leader McCarthy, soon to be Speaker McCarthy, is taking an issue that in all likelihood helped Republicans get over the top in terms of a House majority. Unexpected wins coming in California and Texas, and is going to follow through on what the winning candidates heard.
So there are a handful of Republicans, including Bob Good of Virginia and Andy Biggs of Arizona, who have said they won't vote for Speaker McCarthy. Now, do we think that their ideology is going to carry them through the vote, or are they just maneuvering for maybe some positioning for themselves?
I've seen this for years in both parties, and it is the latter. The idea of standing up for purity, well, that dog won't fetch anymore. And by the way, when Nancy Pelosi became Speaker after the 2006 elections, she had 32 votes in the conference cast against her, one more than were cast against McCarthy in the Republican caucus by Biggs and Good and company. And yet she went on to win resoundingly on the House floor. Most of the complaints of people within the Democratic conference were resolved, and they got what they wanted. Similarly, and I covered this, when Paul Ryan became Speaker of the House back before Donald Trump even became president, 2015 to be exact, he had 43 votes cast against him in favor of Florida Congressman Dan Webster. Webster's supporters and Webster himself worked out their differences with Mr. Ryan, and he coasted to the Speaker's gavel on the House floor. So it will be with Kevin McCarthy. Next week, committee assignments and chairmanships will be announced in the Republican conference, and the new rules, something that Biggs and company were concerned about, will be announced. One feels that he will assuage the critics, that he'll sit down and listen to them, and will come out with the magic 218, that is a majority that's needed to become Speaker on January 3rd and win in the first ballot.
Now, McCarthy had said that he would take Eric Swalwell off of the Intelligence Committee and that he would take Ilhan Omar off of the Foreign Affairs Committee over things she said about Israel. Can he do that?
Well, tell that to someone named Marjorie Taylor Greene, the Republican freshman just reelected from the state of Georgia, said some controversial things that she regretted before she was in politics and before she was elected to Congress. But that was enough for Nancy Pelosi, the Democrats, and 10 of her Republican colleagues to deny her any committee assignments for the previous 2 years. Using that as the yardstick. McCarthy is on firm ground, denying committee assignments to Swalwell and to Omar. It's that simple.
We know the Republicans have control of the House, but we still don't know by how much. How many elections are still outstanding?
As of Saturday morning, Rick, there are two elections that are undecided. One is in Colorado's 3rd District, where Lauren Boebert has a lead of just over 1,000 votes over Adam Fitch, Democrat, and this is the Pueblo area of the Centennial State. The Democrat has already conceded to Ms. Boebert, but there still will be a recount, and she's not been certified or declared the winner by the Associated Press. In California, there is one remaining contest left, and that's in Northern California for the district of retiring Democratic Congressman John Garamendi. Republican John Duarte, a rancher, leads Assemblyman Adam Gray, Democrat, by fewer than 500 votes, with 99% of the ballots counted. This is the closest race for the House of 2022. It's almost certain to go to a recount. Assuming Republicans emerge on top of this, the makeup of the House will be 221 to 214. And that's just a little bit more than the Democrats have had over the Republicans for the past 2 years. Each vote, then, will be a cliffhanger.
And apparently we will not see Sarah Palin on the floor of the House.
You know, it's amazing that when one starts covering someone, when they emerge on political center stage, inevitably he or she lives long enough to write their swan song, and that's what I've done. Sarah Palin is someone I watched soon after she was elected governor of the Land of the Midnight Sun in 06. Bill Kristol and other journalists pronounced her a superstar. She went on to be John McCain's running mate, resigned the governorship to seek fame and celebrity, and then returned 13 years later to run for the seat in Alaska of the late Congressman Don Young. And she lost the general election to Democrat Mary Peltola, with whom she had a very good relationship when Peltola was a state legislator. The problems with Sarah Palin are too numerous to mention. She is somebody who did not follow through on the promise that she lived up to. She left the state and politics to pursue fame and fortune, and when she came back, people never truly forgave her for all of this. But she's still a significant figure. Let's give her her due. Without Sarah Palin, the Tea Party movement would perhaps not have been as strong and as noticed by the media as it was in the 2010 elections. And without her, Donald Trump might not have taken off so quickly and so strongly. She was one of the first political figures to endorse him, and she was someone that Mr. Trump had studied for a long time. The populist nature of politics, the rallying of the masses and bringing in political outsiders, it all started with Sarah, and it doesn't end, even though it appears her career is over.
Well, one Senate race still out there. Of course, that is in Georgia. A lot of attention is being paid to it. A lot of money's going in there, and now we have a very powerful figure going in there.
Democrats don't want to lose this, even though they effectively have control of the U.S. Senate. Barack Obama, the Democrats' heavyweight champion, is going into campaign for Senator Raphael Warnock. He's got some lines and some zingers to throw at Herschel Walker, the Republican candidate, calling him a heck of a football player and someone who looks admiringly at office. But, as Obama says, it's like someone who said, gee, that is a great Boeing jet, but I don't know how to fly it. In any event, he'll be out there throwing zingers and barbs at Herschel Walker and boosting Raphael Warnock. Will it help? One can hardly say. Barack Obama was twice elected president. He's a figure in history, but he was never able to transfer his charisma to other candidates and build a base in the Democratic Party. Remember, he ended his presidency with Republicans in control of both the Senate and the House after he campaigned vigorously in those elections.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, enjoy hopefully a quiet weekend.
Dig into that leftover turkey.
Indeed. It is the Saturday morning update. We've got Cheryl Atkinson coming up next. Then Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and K.T. McFarland will be with us. Right now, Al B. Dees in the WMAO Traffic Center.
So far, so good in Virginia on the Beltway. Looked at the cameras, no crashes or construction slowing you down. On 66 in Fairfax County, eastbound and westbound lanes are at the posted speed limit. Now to 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg. Northbound and southbound lanes are clear and at speed. And if you happen to be going to the airports, whether it's BWI, National, or Dulles, roads leading to the terminals are clear of any delays. You should be able to hit your gate on time. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Cold start to your weekend, but plenty of sunshine will help push that mercury to near 60 degrees this afternoon. Get out and enjoy this gorgeous day, back half of the weekend looking different. Overnight temperatures into the 40s with increasing clouds. Sunday, wet, particularly through the first half of the day with some moderate rain showers. Not quite as mild and windy in the 50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Brian Vandegraaff.
37 degrees in the nation's capital, 720 on the Saturday morning update.
Join WMAL and support our wounded warriors during the Fisher House Radiothon December 1st and 2nd. Visit WMAL.com/Fisher House.
It's a Saturday morning update. It's Thanksgiving weekend. Thank you for being with us. Cheryl Atkinson joins us. She's the host of Full Measure. That's tomorrow morning, ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. And Cheryl, hope you're having a nice Thanksgiving weekend.
Terrific. Thank you for having me, and happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Well, you know, it is Thanksgiving weekend, holiday shopping. You're starting to take a look at the gift ideas, gift lists. And, you know, a lot of people listen to you, Cheryl, on the show, and we've talked over the past few years about the media, the slant of the media. But not everybody understands how slanted the media can be. And you've written several books about it. Your most recent is Slanted, How the News Media Taught Us to Love Censorship and Hate Journalism. And I think that'd make a neat gift idea for somebody, you know, somebody on the list that is follows politics, they follow the news, maybe a news junkie on the list, but they just understand the depth and the magnitude of the media bias. You wrote the book, and as you look at where we are today in 2022, almost 2023, has it improved at all in terms of media accountability, or is it getting worse?
Well, I think it's on a continuum, sort of down a dark path in terms of what's happened to the media, and I don't see it going back. We're not going to go back to the old days of news. Not that we were ever completely unconflicted, you know, and without bias, but it certainly got to hit a peak in the 2015 time period. And in my books, I've sort of written, what I like hearing from people is that they read the books, and they were sort of ahead of the game because the things that I talk about became fairly common knowledge in the coming months, and they felt better prepared to understand what was going on. And I feel like Slanted is the same way. It's still very relevant today, talking about how information is slanted even beyond the news media, how not just the news has been co-opted, but how social media was co-opted by special and corporate interests to try to give a false picture of what life is really like and what you ought to think, with a primary goal in mind to make you feel like you're an outlier if you think something it is off the narrative. In other words, you're supposed to think, gosh, everybody agrees that X. And if I feel differently, I should keep my mouth shut because A, I could get censored by social media or spanked for, you know, feeling the way I do. And B, I must be in the minority because look at everything else that I see on the news and social media. Is it changing? Well, I'm starting to write my next book about the question was whether the pendulum would swing or whether we're just going to keep going with this path I think the media is continuing along the path that's dark, but I think the people are starting to figure out more and more what's going on. And I think there is a bit of a pendulum swing. And I would say one of the biggest marks of that, Rick, is the purchase of Twitter by Elon Musk. With Elon Musk, I say he is to big tech what Donald Trump was to establishment politics. They're both outsiders. They don't play by the same rules. They haven't joined the same team. The establishment doesn't like them and how they operate. But in some respects, that makes them more effective disruptors of the bad things about the system. And with Elon Musk, I mean, just a personal example, my own Twitter account for the first time in memory is not having tens of thousands of followers taken away in big lumps periodically. The account's just sort of growing in a way I haven't seen in many, many years. And I'm seeing people that I've never seen before, like large numbers of people. My posts are being seen by people that hadn't been seeing posts for years and years. And I'm just saying that's a small example of a freer environment that we're going to be able to see, it looks like anyway, on Twitter. And that's a mark of something of a change over this really managed and controlled information that we've seen in a big way for quite some time, but particularly as I've written about starting in the 2015 time period.
Along these lines, I want to mention on your website, you have some merchandise, and I think it's really cool, and you have a theme, do your own research, make up your own mind, think for yourself. And you got everything from Christmas ornaments to stockings to sweatshirts to caps. Tell us a little bit about the fundraising component.
Well, people seem to love these products. They're smart products for independent thinkers that you can't get anywhere else, and they really make a statement. And they're intended to be fun as well. But I use any extra money that comes from operating the store to support independent journalism causes. For example, the cash awards that I've given to the ION Awards that I started, both for student journalism and professional journalists who do great, accurate, fair, independent investigative work. It's not going to necessarily be recognized by some of these big awards that we've heard about because they're sort of off the narrative, and these awards tend to reward establishment journalism, the same groups doing kind of the same stories and the same angles. And if you're off the narrative, you're just not going to be recognized. So that's been great fun to be able to support. I also give money to Project Censored, which does all kinds of reporting and awareness about censored stories. And, of course, the University of Florida, which has a terrific journalism college, the Brechner Center for Freedom of Information that works on freedom of information causes, and all kinds of things. So these are the sorts of things that I love to support. And when people go to the store and buy those products and spread the word about independent thinking, those are the kinds of things that that they're supporting.
Well, that's the Cheryl Atkison store at CherylAtkison.com. And we will look forward to following you on Twitter again.
All right. Thanks a lot. Have a great one.
You too. 7:26, this is the Saturday Morning Update. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer will be coming up. We'll talk to him about Ukraine and an interesting Thanksgiving message on the way from KT McFarland. So stay with us.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Work continues in Kyiv today to try to get electricity back on for about 6 million people after recent Russian attacks on the city. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says from Wednesday to today, they managed to get power back on for half of the people who lost it during blackouts this week. He says the key task of today is energy. Local stores are hoping you'll do some Christmas shopping with them on this small business Saturday. Montgomery County Executive Mark Elridge says if you do, you'll help give the local economy a boost.
When you spend locally, 68 cents out of every dollar stays in our community. That's about 1.6 times more capital staying in the local community as compared to a chain business, and 6 times more capital staying here in.
He says 95% of businesses in Montgomery County have 50 or fewer employees. Investigators not taking a break this holiday weekend from their efforts to figure out who stabbed 4 University of Idaho students nearly 2 weeks ago and why. Fox's Dan Springer.
They are still hammering away at those leads and making progress in this very high-profile case. Most of the work is being done behind the scenes as they analyze all the forensics evidence collected at the house where those four University of Idaho students were butchered as they slept. The FBI has a mobile forensics unit at the police department. We also believe they're looking into whether there may be a connection to a similar attack in Silverton, Oregon, near Salem in August of 2021.
When a man and his wife were stabbed to death in their home around 3 a.m. while they slept. WMAL Sports in the World Cup. The U.S. frustrates England again in a 0-0 draw. The Wizards fell to the Heat. The Caps beat the Flames. Traffic and weather next. Traffic and weather. Here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
On 295, 395, and 695, plus the tunnels and bridges, no crashes or construction slowing you down. Now into Maryland. From Prince George's County through Montgomery County, bridge to bridge, you're not tapping the brakes on the inner loop and on the outer loop. On 270 in Montgomery County, between the Beltway and Frederick, go ahead and set your cruise control. Lanes are clear both directions. Back in Prince George's County, if you're traveling between the two beltways, either on the BW Parkway or 95, I don't have any reports of any slowdowns there. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, sunny, high temps near 60, 38 degrees in Washington right now. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Know the news the minute you wake up. O'Connor and Company with Larry O'Connor, 5 to 9 a.m. on WMAL.
It is the Saturday morning update for Thanksgiving weekend. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, and he is also the co-host of the Thought to Action podcast and author of Operation Dark Heart. Tony, good morning and a happy Thanksgiving weekend to you, sir.
Happy Thanksgiving back to you, and good to be here, Rick. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Well, yeah. We haven't heard too much about military action in Syria, but this week, three U.S. troops sustained minor injuries. It was on Wednesday, a suspected Iran-backed militants launching rockets at two bases in Syria. That word from CENTCOM. And what do you make of that?
So it's been a simmering kind of back burner issue, at least as far as the media is concerned, relating to the conflict to kind of finish ISIS in Syria. I remember, as you mentioned, the Iranians were seen to be part of what happened. The Iranians are allied with the Russians, and the whole thing right now is essentially their proxies and our proxies doing what they can on the ground there to kind of prevent ISIS from coming back and getting going again. With that said, there's always going to be conflicts, especially with the Iranians, of what we're doing on the ground there. So it's going to be something that I think we'll see percolate a little bit more, probably in the spring more than now, but it's still going on. ISIS is still trying to kind of regain its legs and reorganize, but it was very effectively broken during the Trump years a couple years ago. So I think we may see more of this in the spring.
And we'll move right ahead with that Iran nuclear deal, right?
Well, apparently it's on the table again, and the joint agreed-upon framework that I think everybody universally recognized was simply a hardened path for the Iranians to establish a nuclear program rather than prevent it. And for those who remember it, it was simply saying, yeah, we don't care if you do it 10 years from now, just do it 10 years from now. Now it's about 4 years, 5 years have gone by of that, so I think the Iranians are well on their way of having one. My estimation is they have at least two warheads, probably got them from North Korea. They're not going to use them. They're there for purposes of examining how they work, how they should work, and then they're going to build all the components they need except for the enriched material, and that'll come last, and they'll have nuclear weapons within the framework. And I think the Iranians want that agreement back so they can just solidify what they're going to do.
Let's turn to Ukraine. The authorities there are working to restore electricity and water services. Russian military strikes hitting the power grid, and that, of course, costing the power as well as heat for many in Ukraine. Millions have been affected. European countries have been sending generators and heaters to Ukraine. And it's an attack on the infrastructure. The U.S. Ambassador Bridget Brink has called it yet another war crime. What's next for the Russians?
Well, it's not a war crime. That isn't. But, I mean, we do the same thing. We go after countries' infrastructures. We did this against Iraq. So I'm not comparing us to the Russians. I'm just saying that the infrastructure attack is not a war crime. Some of the things Russia has done are war crimes, and those things should be examined. And I think when they co-mingle this stuff, it just kind of undermines their own case. With that said, Rick, there's no doubt that the current strategy of Putin is to punish the Ukrainian people. They've done everything they can to not only take out power, they're taking out water, they're taking out sewage, they're taking out anything that will allow them, the Russians, to put more pain, discomfort, and discontent into the hearts of the Ukrainian people for purposes of trying to get them to break their will and stop them from wanting to fight. This is going to become a very serious issue. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's serious now because of the winter moving in. But about 4 weeks from now, when it's really cold and they're really having problems maintaining power, that's when the real point of bristles is going to come. And I do believe, and I think it's in the interest of the EU, to really get a plan together to try to do what they can to help Ukrainian people get through this. And again, Rick, it's going to get worse before it gets better.
And is part of this really to send a message to European countries and the EU?
No doubt. Yeah. So part of this, obviously, is to you demonstrate this with the Ukrainians and you remind the Europeans, oh, by the way, you know, you depend on a great deal of our Russian power, even gas. So, you know, when we give you this gas, gee, it would be a shame if we decide to turn it off. That would be a huge blow to the Russian economy, no doubt. Now, let's remember that the Russians are still making money off of the export of their natural gas and oil. But if Putin became so committed to making a point, he could shut down a great deal of Europe and make it very painful, especially Germany. Germany's tried to do a few things to mitigate that. They've actually kept, I think, two of their nuclear power plants online, which they plan on shutting down this year. So they're doing things at the last minute to try to bolster it. And I know the United States has been providing some liquid natural gas as well. With that said, Putin, I think, is trying to make the point, using the Ukrainians as an example, is like, your life's going to be really miserable in winter if you don't have power. So this is a twofer for him. I don't think he'll do it, but again, it's something that if he decides to go really extreme, he could make life for the Europeans very, very miserable.
And there has been hope for a negotiated settlement of
right.
some sort. The chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, made some comments, and now he's, trying to fine-tune those comments.
Yeah, I don't think he kind of he didn't completely walk him back, and I kind of appreciate his position. It's a rare comment for me to make regarding Mark Milley. But anyway, he's basically said, look, the Ukrainians are winning right now. It's very clear that they've made significant military gains. They've really reacquired territory that they lost. The Russians have not been able to complete their mobilization yet. Now's the time to try to go for a negotiated settlement of some sort, basically to stop the war before it gets out of hand. As I said last week, I am for this. I think it's time that they look for some way of getting a ceasefire in place before things really get out of hand. As I mentioned, Rick, the Russians have no intention of backing down regarding the attack against infrastructure for the next 2 months. So I just think it is in everybody's interest to find a way to do that. I'm not sure. I don't think it's in the cards, unfortunately, but I think Milley's correct. The Ukrainians have been able to gain some terrain back. They could find a way to kind of bring this thing to at least a close for now and then try to come up with a strategy of how to regain it. But there's just no way if Putin decides to use this 300-man call-up, which some are saying it may be even bigger now, the Ukrainians just won't have the ground forces to sustain, the wave tactics that the old Soviet Union used to have if the Russians decide to use that now.
We keep hearing about Vladimir Putin's health, and he dropped a pen the other day, and that was like international news. What are you hearing that's going on in the inside? Are there power struggles in there, or is he firmly in command?
No, indeed. There are issues, because as it's been recognized, the war is not gone as Kremlin wanted it to go. And it's indeed inevitable. If the Russians lose this, if the Russians, out using all their power and influence and force, fail to subdue and maintain control of the provinces they've taken from Ukraine. And there's a perception that things are just not going to go well. I mean, completely. I mean, clearly they've not gone well, but they haven't given up. If there's a time when, in the mind of the oligarchs and the Russian people, that Putin has failed, it's inevitable that he will be removed, either by the oligarchs, by the by his own government, or by his own hand. I don't know what it'll be, but no Russian leader, Rick, has ever survived the failure of a military conquest at all. And it's always been historic going back to the Tsar. So I do see it that this is a do or die thing for Putin. He's got to win or he's going to lose and lose everything. And I think his health is a factor, but it's more important to consider those around him and how they're going to react to the upcoming issues as they play out over the next 2 months.
So we had a leadership change in the presidency in 2020. And it was virtually a 180 on policy.
Right.
You know, the Biden administration, Trump administration, light years apart. If there is a leadership change in Russia, will it just be a repeat of the Putin strategy, the Putin feeling, the Putin power grab?
Great question.
Could somebody maybe get the message?
Again, going back to the czars, the Russians have always had a sense of paranoia that has driven their foreign policy. They've always wanted buffer states around Mother Russia. So the answer is it'll be different but the same. I think whoever the Russian leader is, I think that person would imbue the same basic qualities that every other Russian leader has had since the czars. And remember, Rick, these guys all go to the same club. They're very similar in their approach to their quote unquote republic. So I think you may see a diminution of aggressiveness towards Ukraine, but you will not see a change which gives up the Russian gains or the interest of Russia of having Ukraine in its orbit. So it would be deja vu all over again in many ways. So
wonderful. The Thought to Action podcast at LondonCenter.org. What's on the program this weekend?
So we got Major General John Kim, the former commandant of the War College, and our senior fellow Gordon Chang, and myself talking about China and what we think collectively are the issues the Biden administration should be paying attention to relating to how to counter the bellicose language that Xi had expressed during his coronation as president for life of China, and what to expect in the U.S. So I think people will really enjoy it.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, Thought to Action podcast at LondonCenter.org. Tony, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rick.
It's 7:46, the Saturday morning update. KT McFarland is next on the program, but first, Al BD's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
Good morning. Here's your latest traffic update. In Virginia, on the Beltway, after looking at the cameras, I didn't see any crashes, have no reports of any construction. You'll be at speed on the inner loop and on the outer loop. In Fairfax County on 66, you're not tapping the brakes eastbound or westbound. On 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, lanes are clear both northbound and southbound. And if you are going to the airports, BWI, National, or Dulles, roads leading to the terminals are clear of any delays. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Cold start to your weekend, but plenty of sunshine will help push that mercury to near 60 degrees this afternoon. Get out and enjoy this gorgeous day. Back half of the weekend looking different. Overnight temperatures into the 40s with increasing clouds. Sunday, wet, particularly through the first half of the day with some moderate rain showers. Not quite as mild and windy in the 50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Brian Vandegraaff.
37 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:47 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. KT McFarland joins us. She was President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor. She is a board member of the American Conservative Union and the author of the bestseller Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, always an honor to have you with us.
Honor and a pleasure for me too, Rick.
Thank you. And in the past, we have talked about your Thanksgiving Day gatherings at the McFarland home. And it sometimes gives us a little bit of a barometer on what's going on in the United States, what's going on in terms of how people feel, and really also on the international front. So I'm interested to hear about the annual gathering at the McFarland Home for Thanksgiving.
Well, you're sweet to remember and you're kind to ask. Every year at Thanksgiving, this is when we have the big holiday, and we have five children. They all have spouses. They all have kids. And so this year we were 19 around the table.
My goodness.
And we always go around the table and say, what are you thankful for this year? And, you know, everybody does the usual thing. I mean, one of my grandsons said, oh, I'm really thankful I got into this fraternity in college. And, you know, and some people are thankful for their spouses, for their health. But this year something struck me. So one of my sons-in-laws said, and they live in London, and he said, well, you know, for the first time, I realize I'm thankful for security. And I thought, security? I mean, this is defund the police stuff? And he said, no, it's that I've never, as a European, you know, as a sophisticated European, American, whatever, have ever worried about security of my nation. And he said, we're seeing in London, we see the Ukrainian refugees. We're much closer to the conflict. We have a lot of friends in Germany and Poland and France and other countries, and they're really all of a sudden concerned about the security of their nation. So it got me to thinking, you know, gee, there's so much that we just take for granted that it's really worthwhile to start counting our blessings as Americans. You know, not only do we live in a free country and a prosperous country and with health care, I mean, we have all of the blessings that we kind of forget about, and particularly now for people like me, Republicans, conservatives, everybody's in a huge funk. We're all going around saying, ooh, the end of the world. We lost the election we should have won. And people are either too despondent and too depressed to talk about anything other than how terrible the country is and the fate of the universe depends on the next election. But we've forgotten that it's really worth recounting your blessings. There's something called the attitude of gratitude that has been shown to be really good for your health. So I think that this year people ought to just take a deep breath after a very disappointing election and take a deep breath, focus on your family, think about what is good about your life, and stop worrying about the little stuff. And then in the new year, start recalibrating how we win elections again.
Well, you talk about taking things for granted, and the only time we realize that power is important to us is when there is a storm and the power goes out. But when you look at what's happening in Ukraine, where Russia goes in, targets the power grid, they're in the dark, the heat is off, and it's something I can't imagine what that must feel like to have missile strikes taking out your power. Your neighbors and potentially relatives have been killed or injured in these attacks from Russia, and this is supposed to be a civilized country in a civilized world.
You know, and it's going to get a lot worse. I mean, Russia is not winning. Putin knows that he can't survive in office unless he shows something for his efforts. And he sure as heck can't admit defeat and go home to Moscow, you know, with Russian army tail between its legs. So I think what happens is that they will escalate, and they'll escalate in the following way, not necessarily nuclear weapons, but they'll just start leveling Ukrainian society. They'll start deliberately targeting civilian and infrastructure. They'll start targeting, you know, hospitals, roads, electricity generating plants, water supplies, water filtration systems, and they're just going to grind Ukraine down. Now, people say in Washington they've got this fond dream that, well, Putin's going to have so many people at home that dislike what he's doing, he's going to be overthrown, he's going to be deposed, he's going to be, who knows, he's not going to be president of Russia. But look a little bit closer and you realize that the people in Russia, they don't want defeat. They want victory. And so the criticism is not coming from people who want to have kumbaya, let's get out of Ukraine, let's have a happy time again, let's focus on what matters to us. The criticism of Putin is coming from the other direction of people saying, you're not being tough enough. You got to win this. And so if Putin is somehow replaced, we should worry about what comes next. It could be even worse. The thing I find, though, and when I look at America and compare, you know, what's happening in Europe, what's happening in the United States, there's that same sense of, oh, gee, they're not playing fair. Isn't that horrible? So Republicans are saying, ballot harvesting, you know, inner city machines. They screw up elections. Republicans should have won. What's the reason we didn't win? And some focus is looking on, well, the game is skewed. The Democrats are gaming the system. And it's okay, yeah. But what do we do about it? And that's the next question I would ask is, are we all just going to whine about it and complain about it and isn't this terrible, isn't this uncivilized? Or do you go do something about it? And I keep thinking, I'm a New Yorker, so I keep thinking back to Tammany Hall. Tammany Hall was the Democrat machine that kept getting Democrat politicians elected. And what would they do? Well, they had the unions for sure, and they had the, you know, the Irish and others, groups who would vote as a group for the Tammany Hall politicians, but they also sit on the street corner and, you know, handed out $5 bills or you know, mugs of beer to say, vote for my candidate. And so they bought votes. But what happened is that Tammany Hall wasn't made illegal. Tammany Hall was just outsmarted, and it was outsmarted by reformers like Teddy Roosevelt, who ultimately became president of the United States. So I think that as conservatives, first of all, let's have the attitude of gratitude for all Americans. And secondly, let's just figure out how to win elections. Don't whine about how unfair it is. You're not going to change some states which allow ballot harvesting. You're not going to overturn their election regulations and stipulations and rules. Go out and beat them at their own game. So that would be my advice to everybody who's really despondent right now. Appreciate what we have. Get a good rest. Spend some time with your family and realize what's important. And then go figure out how you're going to win the next election.
And we got about a minute left. The Republicans have the House. We hear now that they're going to do a lot of investigations, but in a minute, just how do you manage the Republican House responsibly so that the voters in 2024 say, hey, they came in and they did some good things? In 1 minute, what is your advice to the incoming Republican leadership?
You have two goals. You have two jobs here. One, stop the bleeding. So stop the Biden administration from doing any more harm. And the way you do that is these investigations. Find out what happened before, but tie them up so that they don't have, you know, there's only so much oxygen in the Oval Office. Tie it all up so they can't do any more harm. Get them so focused on these investigations into every aspect of the administration. But secondly, chart a path for the future. The next Republican primary is going to be, you know, maybe 15 candidates are going to be running, and they'll all be running on more or less the same platform. We know what that platform is. It's pro-energy, it's fix the economy, it's rebuild the military, it's stand up to China. So the House should also take the lead in crafting what is going to be the new Republican platform. So do two jobs. Stop the bleeding, stop the Biden administration from doing any more harm to the nation, to our security, and to our economy. And secondly, look for the future. Elections are always about the future.
K.T. McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People, and on this Thanksgiving shopping weekend, that makes a great holiday gift idea. K.T., as always, thank you so much.
Honor and a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. And that's it for the Saturday morning update. Garden Sense coming up at 1 o'clock this afternoon. Thank you for being with us, and have a wonderful Thanksgiving weekend.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.